You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of More Than a White Man's Game, a baseball podcast on the House of L Network. I am your host, Maddie Lee, and today is going to be all White Sox. And not just an overarching White Sox theme, I wanted to dive into one specific question / angle. So, to give a little background first, obviously, great time to talk about the White Sox because they're in their stretch run. They added at the deadline to an already pretty formidable squad and pitching staff. They're getting guys back from injury. Really exciting time for the organization, for that fan base. But I started thinking a little more about this topic that, of course, I'd heard about coming in, and that is the national media's relationship with the Sox. Namely, that I'd heard a lot about the Sox not getting the attention that they deserve from the national media. And I think at first I kind of just brushed it off as like, yeah, lots of fan bases think that their team deserves more attention than they get. But then around Crosstown and with a couple more current examples, I started talking to more people about this concept and seeing things pop up even while the White Sox are clearly a favorite in the division and, you know, really pushing for a championship here. And so I wanted to not just acknowledge this discussion topic, but I also wanted to explore kind of what that dynamic between both the Sox and the national media and the Sox and their crosstown rival, the Cubs, what those dynamics can do and how they can shape a fan base and a team and kind of the aura around a team. And so on Thursday, I called up two different experts to give two different perspectives, really, on this topic. The first is Lamon Pope, who wonderful beat writer covering the White Sox for the Chicago Tribune. I started laying the groundwork back during All-Star to make sure that I could get him on this podcast at some point. Conned him into it. It was successful, but he's going to give us the perspective from someone who covers the team. And then I also called Tony Gill, who I'm sure you guys know from multiple podcasts in this network. He is also my coworker at NBC Sports Chicago, does an amazing job as our podcast producer there. He's coming in to give the perspective as a White Sox fan. Of course, not the White Sox fan perspective, right? His own perspective as a White Sox fan. But I thought it was important to get, you know, the different, there are obviously a lot of different people who have opinions on this, who have kind of a different angle into it. But I wanted to get both those dynamics into this discussion. I'm so glad I did because they both brought up both perspectives and separate topics within the broader discussion than I had thought about and then also than I had talked with the other one about. So it's a good one for sure. We cover a lot under this umbrella of the White Sox and the national media. So we'll kick things off now with Lamond. Lamond, thanks so much for joining me. I'm stoked to talk about Sox with you. I feel like we have too much of a Cubs presence every week with me here, and it's time to even the tables a little bit.
Thank you for having me, Maddie. Anytime, for sure.
Of course. Well, I want to start with, as we're diving in to the question of the Sox and national coverage, etc., I want to start with this quote that I'm actually going to read out of your story from earlier this year, which kind of pertains, it was early on, but dives into kind of this crosstown question. You might know which one I'm talking about, from Liam Hendricks.
Liam Hendricks, yes.
And he says, I feel like we have to take four steps to get any sort of national recognition, while our crosstown rivals just have to put together one game and they'll get on it. First of all, do you agree with what he's saying there? And if so, why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, let's start with a little bit of a background. I believe that was right around the time. It might have been actually the day after Javier Baez did his run back,
yes,
in Pittsburgh. And so of course, that's going to get a lot of attention, right? I mean, it was such
for
a
huge...
So you know, I mean, it's like you know, I don't even remember what the question was prompted, or how the question was prompted, because like you said, it was so early in the season. It wasn't as if the Cubs Sox series was right around the corner, but someone did bring that up, and you know, when he first said it, I was like, because he also did it in the context of, well, I played in Oakland and we were the little brothers to the Giants, so it was also kind of coming from the perspective of, you know, I've been there. I know what it's like. You know, I think he actually said, you know, I embrace that role. I like having that little underdog, that little chip on my shoulder to do it. And he also brought that up again on Thursday at the Field of Dreams game. You know, that was brought on back, you know, just kind of being in that national spotlight. And he referenced what he said earlier, what we're talking about right now. I mean, I understand what he's saying. But I do believe that there's an opportunity nationally, at least with the way, obviously, things have, you know, the fire sale that happened on the north side, and the way that this team is playing, and the characters that they have as well. You know, not only the talent, but also the personalities, that there's going to be the opportunity for, this ball club to have, you know, more of a national spotlight, more of a national shine. Obviously, we're seeing that a little bit more, right? You know, we were both at the All-Star game. Who was the last person that we talked to? Liam, right? And so, like, and he was
Court.
Yes, right. And it wasn't. Yeah, it was us. It was USA Today was there. You know, Jason Stark from The Athletic was there. So it wasn't. You know, so there was national presence at that All Star game. You know, with Liam and his, you know, not only getting the save, but his other antics as well that were involved with that, right? So we're starting to see that, and obviously, you know, someone like Tim Anderson being on that stage Thursday is a perfect example. You know, obviously it was going to be the show. It was one of the showcase events. Everyone knew going on into it. You know, you have the Yankees there, and you have the first place Sox. As Kevin Costner said, how do you phrase it? You got the first place White Sox cheer, and you've got the New York Yankees. Yeah. Well, first I was wondering, well, how long is it going to take Kevin to kind of get to where he's got? You know, he milked that for his first name basis, me and Kevin Costner.
Oh, yeah.
So being on that stage and then producing and having the game that team that they had, you know, not only winning in the way that they won, but all the stars really shining on through. Jose Abreu hitting a home run. Eloy Jimenez hitting a three-run home run. And then obviously Tim Anderson coming on through in the dramatic fashion that he did. And having someone like Liam, who was really like the lead cheerleader, the lead promoter of the event, from the player's perspective. I mean, he did a press conference or a Zoom on Monday leading up to it. He did two media sessions on game day. He did a little gaggle on the field, and then he did the actual the official one in the media room, in the interview room, and then he actually talked to Fox during the game. So when you have people like that, that
are a little smoother than the last time when he was my
yep, a little better, yes. Maybe they knew to have the delay. So when you have characters like that, and when you have personalities like that, and when you have the talent that they have on top of it, you know, there's that opportunity to, you know, shine a little bit more on that national stage.
Yeah. When you look at traditionally, right, between there are a lot of famous examples of, you know, ESPN forgetting about their World Series, or Ben Verlander caused quite the stir on the Fox side, forgetting to put the White Sox in the top 10. I mean, when you look at examples like that, and then obviously there's always been, you know, some hype around the Cubs, even when they're maybe not performing as well. Is it as simple as saying, like, you know, the Cubs had WGN who broadcast their games for years nationwide, and that drummed up a national fan base, or is there another element there?
Yeah, well, first I'm glad you brought up Ben. It's like the Fox Sports thing. It's like we're talking a power ranking. It's a power ranking. Calm down. He forgot. I mean, should he have forgotten? No, but you know,
been the backlash would have been a much different tenor if like a woman had forgotten about the Sox. Yeah. So that's an entirely different discussion.
Ain't that the truth? Yes. And well, let me throw it back at you a little bit. So, like, growing up on the West Coast, you know, out in Seattle, like, what was sort of like your sort of introduction? You know, when it came to this, how often did you hear about the White Sox?
Yeah, practically never. Mm-hmm. Obviously, growing up was a Mariners fan, and then you know, the Cubs were just such a big presence in Wrigley Field. But yeah, I mean, even as someone who was watching, you know, who was more tuned in to the American League, mm-hmm. growing up in an American League town, the Cubs were very much more on my radar than the White Sox.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So yeah, you know, and so you brought up the WGN thing, and that's always, I mean, that's, I think that's a valid point. Even here, yeah, there's a period of time when I was young, well, when I was really young, the Sox games were on something called Sports Vision, and which was essentially like a little bit of a preview of pay-per-view. And my grandpa got it. And so like if I wanted to watch a Sox game, you know, we'd have to go over there to watch it on Sports Vision. I mean, again, I was way too young, and I was probably asleep by the time the game started at 7 o'clock. And so there wasn't really a whole lot of that, but you know, the draw of, you know, WGN having games on after, you know, having to play during the afternoon at home, you know, since they didn't have the lights until 88, So it was something where, like, if you, for a kid, you know, you get back home and you caught the last, you know, you caught the last couple innings of the game there. But I do remember when they first, when the Sox first got to, I think it was called Sports Channel. I can't remember the names of at that time. But like, you know, having the opportunity to see, you know, see the team, see, you know, listen to Hawk Harrelson and Ken Pechorek. You know, there's a new sort of excitement because again, you know, I've sort of been, you know, for so long it was the Cubs, it was the Braves on TBS, the Mets were on WOR, and so it was mostly, you know, from the national perspective, when you had those type of teams, it was those were the three teams that had that sort of superstation national type of draw, and so even locally, getting the Sox on, I'll say Sports Channel, but I don't remember exactly what it was. You know, and having that opportunity to watch them on a day-to-day basis was something that kind of locally, even for me, was something that was very exciting. So from that national perspective, yeah, I do believe that there was always something that, you know, that was, you know, you have not only the team, you know, the 84 team, the 89 team, you have Harry. So when the team was bad, you at least would be able to listen to Harry and Steve. And so that was a draw, you know, same thing with the Braves. I mean, the Braves were always bad when I was growing on up, but it was still, it's like there's a ball game on and you get the chance to listen to Skip Carey and everything else. And so yeah, you know, that, you know, there's a reason why the Braves are a big draw, or, you know, have a huge fan base. There's a reason why the Cubs have that huge fan base. So there's a little bit more of that appeal from it. It really wasn't until, obviously, when, like, you know, the Sox sort of did the change. You know, the good guys wear black, and they switched up the uniforms. You know, that the hat became very popular, and so that was something that kind of, you know, that sort of reboot sort of, you know, boosted their image from that standpoint. From a national perspective, yeah, it wasn't really the play on the field, it wasn't the actual people watching the games, but it was sort of this, you know, it was the branding, it was, you know, the rebrand really, really worked from that perspective, and wearing the Sox hat became really cool, and that became more of a thing that you'd see, you know, across the country, different people wearing the Sox hats from that perspective. But the games themselves, when you first thought about it, you know, it was from the national perspective, yeah, it was a majority of the time the Cubs there.
Right. Yeah. I mean, as we're going through this and as we, you know, make fun of the Benton Verlander incident, there very much is still this sense of a chip on the shoulder, whether it's because of things happening now or the history that we just went over. What do you think, what kind of impact have you seen that, how have we seen that reflected on the team themselves? And, you know, we talked about Hendricks's quote, but just overall this group.
Yeah, I mean, it's an appeal. It's an opportunity for. I think that they recognize they're going to go out and do their business. You know, go out and play on a day to day basis. Yeah, you know, when you add someone like Tony La Russa to the mix, that's gonna drum up national interest. Even before everything that's happened this season. It was a surprise pick, right? Here, Hall of Famer. I remember when, Bob Nightingale of USA Today first mentioned that was a possibility. Now I'm thinking, I don't know about that. So I wrote
not from just a lot of people. It wasn't just a handful.
So I remember like writing something up. We had a pretty long piece, maybe a day or two after, just sort of retelling a little bit of his history, his first game with the Sox, the separation, and then I think the last thing was like the reunion, the reunion question mark. I remember just kind of going on through it and but then when it happened, it was like, it's a national story. So right off the bat, coming from a team that, made its first playoff appearance, since 2008, first winning season since 2012, And for them to have that stage, they played the early games during that playoff series, and that's something that might put a little bit of a chip on the player's shoulders. Like being put in that time slot, and then the way that the series played on out, the winning the first game, the way that Giolito pitched so well, losing game two, and then losing game three. But someone like Tim Anderson performing really well during that series, I think 9 hits, sort of set the stage, kind of was a little bit of a preview for what we're seeing this season. You add in a Tony La Russa, that's going to drum up some interest, positive and also some, a wide range of perspectives that were given with the hiring. And then
kind way to put it.
I try to be kind.
Yeah.
and then you get to the season itself, all of the injuries. You lose Eloy. Eloy is such a his talent is through the roof. He obviously he needs to still work on fielding, but his bat, I feel bad sometimes. Sometimes I refer to him as slugger. He's not. He's got tremendous power. He can go left to right. Just wherever and take the ball out and hit it a mile. But he is a tremendous hitter. He'll go with a pit. Just a tremendous pure hitter. So calling him a slugger, I think it's a little bit of is underrating him because his all around skills when he's in the box are tremendous. Plus, on top of it, he's such a ham.
Right? Personalities.
Yes, he loves it. He has this new thing with the crowd pregame. So he'll, everyone's doing their stretches. So he'll turn to the crowd, he'll jump up and point to the sky, and the crowd will start cheering, going crazy. And then he'll turn back around, do a little stretch, then turn back around and then do it again. And the crowd goes nuts. He loves the fans. Hi Mom and his interactions with Vinny, what a mustache. He enjoys his interactions with us. He enjoys his interactions with the fans. And most importantly, from the White Sox perspective, he's a heck of a ball player. So you add someone like that in the mix. But then you lose them. I guess I was getting back on track. So you lose them during spring training, and you're not sure how long the prognosis is going to be a long, lengthy recovery. So you lose him off the bat. You lose perhaps your most talented player in Luis Robert in that freak incident running to first base. And he's silent. So right off the bat, you lose two-thirds of your outfield and you lose, probably your best all-around talented player and your best and perhaps your best pure hitter as well. So you take those two out of the lineup. So if you would have told me, you're going to play a chunk of the season without Eloy, without Luis, I would have been like, well, the Twins are certainly running away with this division, right? So the fight, right? I would have been way wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said the exact same thing as things were unfolding to start the season. I was like, oh man, that sucks because they looked primed to be so good. Too bad. And then, like you said, they proved me wrong.
Yeah, I mean, you get someone like Billy Hamilton to hit home runs in back-to-back games for the first time since I think 2014. It's like magical things like that. You're plugging in Andrew Vaughn, who's going to possibly be your DH, but you say, here, go on. He's a natural first baseman, and you say, here, go out and play left field. And he looks like a natural out there. He looks like someone. He looks like a left fielder. He's really played a very good left field for the team. Now they have him out in right field sometimes with Eloy back. And he made a couple of those plays on that Sunday night game against the Cubs. Same thing with like a Jake Lamb. Here's someone that's a natural infielder. Just go on out and play left field in the major leagues. and they haven't skipped a beat as a team as a whole. You have Brian Goodwin, who they signed immediately after Luis went down. And he comes on up, his first game with the Sox, 5 RBIs, the first game there in Wrigley, he subs on in as a pitch runner, and then he eventually hits the go ahead 2-run home run leading off the bottom of the top of the 10th. I guess what we were told in Denver that's probably going to go away, the 10th inning rule, right? But I'm still kind of getting used to the leadoff 2-run home run.
Right. Right. Yeah. That sounds wrong. And yet.
So it's been all these contributions from throughout the board on top of guys like Tim, on top of guys like Jose. That's the funny thing. Tim Anderson, 2019 Bay Area champ, Jose Abreu, MVP, and now we're just getting to those guys in the discussion, right? We haven't even discussed the pitching as well. That's been lights out. So.
Right, which is deep.
So yeah, the talent's through the roof, and the personalities are through the roof, and that's the right combination for a team to kind of gain some more of that national attention.
Yeah, and it seems like you said with the game in the corn. So many corn jokes. Between the Field of Dreams game and them, being in the stretch run now, maybe some of that is starting to catch on. But what was it like for you in the beginning of the season when you're covering all these great storylines, whether it's, them overcoming injuries or, all these great personalities that you just mentioned? And it seems like the things that kept catching fire were all just like Tony La Russa controversy.
Well, I mean, but yeah, I mean, that's kind of what to be expected, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you have someone who again was a surprise hiring, to say the least, the attention that's going to be brought to it is going to be tenfold, and so every single step along the way. The the situation in Cincinnati where you didn't know that Liam, or that you could substitute for a pitch run for a pitcher. I give him credit for you know, some people, it might have tried to smooth it on out and try to play it off like, but he was really, he was upfront about it. He was like, I didn't know the rule. I didn't know. But even, you know, before that, there was a situation in Seattle. Matt Foster gave up a bunch of runs in relief. They lost a game. I think they're leading 4-1, and then they lost that game. And again, he was like, he came on into the Zoom, and right off the bat, it's like, that loss is on me. So things of that nature, right off the bat, coming on off of, I think, one thing that, one of the offseason stories was the DUI. So there wasn't a situation I'm a Hall of Famer. I know what's right. My way is the only way. I've never gotten that sense from the beginning of covering him this season. But the self-inflicted storylines, like the Mercedes one. I mean, that was a story. Like they're blowing out the Twins. Mercedes is that bad. The Twins have a position player on the mound. He lobs one in, home run. The play, being there, it's it's one line in my story. That's it. One line at the wake up the next day and I get on Twitter and I see the Twins announcers are about it, and it's like, but I understand it. It's they're the home, it's the home team's crew. That's their right to go ahead and be like, tisk about it. But I'm like, okay, I'm not writing about it. The Twins announcers are upset about it. Okay, let that be a Twitter thing. It was one of those first, I think it might've been the first series in which we were able to actually go on down and talk to the players. We're in the stands and they're on the field. Right. And
that was such an awkward scene. Yeah, where it's just giant, like mesh with giant holes that separating you two. And you're like, yeah, sure. This seems, that's making
sense. We're totally protected. You. So I think that was the first series in which we were able to get on down there. So I had a couple of interviews on that, but they made Yermin available, and he spoke. And so, but again, Yermin being Yermin, that's what he likes to say. It's fine. Now we know what that means. So we get done with Yermin, and Tony gets on. And then he says what he says, and it's like, now this is a story. It's like it went from, a little small little thing that, when Yermin talked, I was like, okay, I can kind of just do a little thing about Yermin reaction, home run. But that's it. But then it became a big deal because what Tony said. And I was like, again, that was the situation. It's like, it's a self-inflicted sort of situation where they it didn't have to be a thing, then it became a thing.
Fuel of the some of the pushback from his original hire too. And
it, that's a great point, because it seemed like and then the player, the players, obviously, Tim right off the bat sticking on up for Yermin as well. But he also did it in a way that it didn't bury Tony La Russa. Tim was Tim. But it was a situation where so many of those storylines, you're right off the bat, dealt with Tony, and the fact that the team was able to kind of navigate through those and still kind of keep the focus on playing and playing well says a lot about the group of players that they have there in that locker room.
Yeah,
it would also be a little more interesting as well. Yeah, this is one of those situations where us not being in the clubhouse on a day-to-day basis, we're kind of, it's gotten a little bit better, obviously, right? With yep. having the chance to get on down onto the field and to actually have the face-to-face conversations from that perspective. But it's still not the same as being in that clubhouse and having the full 40 or 5 minutes or whatever to kind of just to talk and to go, go beyond the actual, let's just do this interview and get it over with or whatever. So it would have been really interesting to be in there to kind of get that added dynamic of how, especially during that period of time, how everything was handled and how they were able to kind of navigate on through it and be where they are right now with a tremendous lead there in the Central Division.
Yeah, because that could have easily been a turning point in the other way if, Tony had lost the locker room, for example, and it could have gone up in flames right there. But these guys are resilient.
Yeah, in more ways than one. I mean, it's just the they just sort of brush off any sort of story that comes along, and then resilient from the, as we talked about earlier, with the injuries as well. But it helps when you have a pitching staff with Lance Lynn and Carlos Rodon doing what Carlos was doing, and Lucas, when you have three guys in Lucas, Dallas, and Lynn going into the season that were received Cy Young votes last year, you knew it was going to be the potential for that staff was going to be there. But to have Carlos Rodon do what he's been able to do at a consistent level, he had a great spring, and then the no hitter, obviously, the near perfect game slash ended up being the no hitter. Was tremendous accomplishment for him. But then to be able to carry that on over, earn an all-star selection, and to have this consistency throughout the season, it's been something else to watch as well.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
So we've talked about the White Sox kind of gaining a little bit of that national recognition. And the Cubs are a bunch of, I get constantly get messages, like 90% of my messages on Twitter now are, or I guess my mentions are, who is that? never heard of this man before. So the Cubs, a lot of, are introducing a lot of new players to the league and to the fan base. Do you think, you know, with the media landscape shifting from what we talked about earlier, in terms of it, you know, mostly being either team or regional networks, you know, in addition to obviously the national networks picking up select games, and then the Cubs and the White Sox going in opposite directions in terms of competitive windows, do you think it's possible for the White Sox to kind of catch up to the Cubs in terms of national recognition?
Probably not. When you have a when you have a huge lead, it's tough to catch on up, right? Yeah, I was trying to think of a metaphor, but it wasn't coming out right. So
they're up by like 15 in the third.
what can happen? Again, if this team does have a lengthy postseason run, we've mentioned the corn game a couple times, I love how Tony called it that the other day. It was like, well, you know, that I can't remember what he was referencing. It was like, yeah, you know, out in the corn game. And it's like, all right, that's what I'm calling it from now on. the ratings for that were spectacular, right? You know, I think Fox said that it was the highest rated regular season game in 16 years. And, you know, obviously part of that's just the uniqueness of the event, the way the game turned out. You know, people were tuned on in from first pitch to the last pitch. So glad that there's a moment in the ninth inning, you know, since all the interviews, the first time this year in which we were able actually going to have interviews in an interview room, not via Zoom. So top of the ninth happens, or top of the ninth, you know, we get to top of the ninth, and I'm like, well, you know, it's a little bit of a distance. You know, you got the crowd. It's like, all right, well, when should I head on down to get to the interview room? I'm like, well, I'm there with me and Vinny. We're there, and it's like, well, okay, so I'm gonna stay. I'm like, you know what? I'll stay too. Just, you know, we can navigate through the crowd. We can, you know, because you're thinking, COVID, we got our mask. Yeah, you know, just wear your mask and just kind of work your way in through that. So I was like, you know what, we're here. It's the Field of Dreams game. Let's go ahead and, you know, let's play it out to the end. And I'm glad we did, right? Like being able to witness, you know, the boom from Judge and Stanton. And then, so like, you know, I had one version of a quick story that was, you know, ready to go. And then the Yankees take the lead, and so I'm like, delete. And then I rewrote it where, you know, some along the lines of, you know, wasn't a Hollywood ending for the Sox, blah blah blah. Hendricks, you know, gave up the two bombs in the ninth, and then, you know, Sebi gets on, and Vinny actually called it. He was like, what if Anderson goes deep here? And like almost as soon as he said it, boom! I'm like, oh my God. So bleep. You know, Hollywood. You know, just, well, actually, that was easier. I was able to say it was a Hollywood ending for the song. So it's like, all right, well, that point, that worked out well. So what was the question?
if they can catch up to the Cubs.
Oh yeah.
But I'm just picturing the panic that you would have had to go through if you were walking down to the interview room the Yankees' original comeback.
Oh, I mean, it would have been like the roar from the crowd, like after the if after the, you know, after the Judge home run, it would have been one thing. It would have been like, kind of queasy, like, should I just run back up? But then if it would have happened after the Stanton one, I would have been kicking myself. I would have been like, I can't believe I'm walking down and that happens. Luckily we stayed, luckily we saw all happen and we're able to kind of take it all in. But yeah, the ratings were phenomenal for the game. And like I said, yeah, it has a little bit to do obviously with the uniqueness of the event, the way the game unfolded. But it's also an opportunity, for those guys to kind of take that next step, to take that, you know, it's a sign that there is interest. And that these players, you know, can be a draw on that sort of stage. So it'll be really interesting just to see if there is a lengthy postseason run. Just how much more of an interest can that draw on up from that perspective. So yeah, that'll be worth monitoring from that national perspective. You know, just how much more, how many more bandwagon fans can join on in to start rooting for the team, but yeah, there's a long way to go for any team. I mean, you know, not only the Sox, but just, yeah, I mean the Cubs are one of those, as you know, I mean the Cubs are one of those brands like the Yankees and Dodgers and they have Braves, they have that national appeal that's going to be really, it's really tough to join that group. Yeah. Right, like I'm trying to think. You know, like the last kind of team that can kind of, you know, forgot the Red Sox as well. Don't want to, you know, Yankee fans. No, Red Sox. I don't want to forget those Red Sox fans as well. yeah. So I'm trying to think of one of those type of teams that was able to kind of, you know, have that sustained sort of, you know, arrival and then be there. So I'll have to think about that for the next time that you have me on.
Perfect. Yeah. Well, and then I feel like speaking to that is right. The White Sox got the corn game after being a centerpiece of this movie and going on a really good run. You know, they were looking it was supposed to be last year, but they were, you know, promising fun group. Now the Cubs are getting it for next year.
Yeah.
And it's like, we have no idea what that team's going to look like. It's not going to be as bad as they are right now. No offense to the players who are playing their heart outs, but they just had a 12-game losing streak. So it won't look like it does now. But it's not the same as...
No, yeah, I mean it was going to be a tough act to follow. Whatever teams are going to be there, you know, because of just the originality of it. I mean, yeah, I mean they're not going to drag, you know, Kevin. Yeah, you know, they're not going to have Cotter come back out there again, right? I mean, you know, he's like I'm one and done. You know, I did my little press conference. I wandered through aimlessly for like 5 minutes.
Photos.
maybe they can get one of the other actors to appear. but again, you're not going to get Kevin Costner to come on back. Or I'd be surprised, I'd just say, if they can get Kevin Costner to come on back. But just the, you know, the uniqueness of the scene setting, you know, the players walking on through the corn maze cornfield to get onto the field before the game. It was just a really cool setting from the beginning, really original, and sort of kind of have that sort of see, and then for the game to unfold the way the game unfolded. You know, on top of it, I think I had a line in one of the stories. It was like, you know, Manfred said there's going to be a second game, but, you know, there's no way that it's going to be almost impossible for the sequel to live up to this original. So that's going to be the case with, you know, again, if, you know, the fact that the Cubs are in the position that they're in right now. Yeah, But even if they were, you know, kind of at that full strength and full capacity, it was going to be, regardless, it was going to be really tough for that next set of teams to come on in there to kind of duplicate what we saw there a week ago today.
Indeed. Any parting thoughts before I let you go?
Well, you know, it's just been, you know, from a reporter's perspective, obviously, it's just been a fascinating scene. It seems to be there's something new every single night, even last night, right? You get Lance Lynn, getting ejected in the fourth inning for tossing his belt back onto the field, when the umpires, and then saying afterwards, I guess I hurt his feelings. Again, that speaks to what we've been speaking to, just the amount of personalities and characters that this team has. There seems to be something new every single day that kind of pops on up with this ball club. That from the beat writer's perspective, obviously gives us plenty to monitor and to follow on a day-to-day basis. But from the national perspective as well, I mean, it's something that can kind of create interest and kind of can create that buzz. So it'll be really interesting just to see how a lot of people are like, well, they've got this really comfortable lead in the Central. But if you're the Sox, you want to be in a position to have as many home games as possible. So they can't kind of take that pedal off the gas, because particularly you remember last year where they stumbled down the stretch and then they went into the playoffs and it was a sort of short stay for the team. So you know, the big thing, Grandal's down in AAA now, getting healthy. It seems like he'll be that final sort of piece. Then they'll be at full strength for the first time. A fully operational White Sox team could be a very dangerous team in October.
For sure. Well, that's a perfect note to wrap this up on. Thank you so much for joining me for this.
Thanks, Maddie. I really appreciate. This was a lot of fun. I really, really, really had a blast, and would like to do it anytime. Go ahead and get in touch, and we'll do it again.
Yeah, I'll take you up on that. All right, now that we have heard from the beat writer, it's time to hear from the fan. Drumroll for the Tony Gill. All right, Tony, thank you so much for joining me as our resident White Sox fan here for this episode. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I was looking forward to joining More Than a White Man's Game, since I, as you know, am not a white man. So I'm really excited about this experience today.
This is news to me.
That happens to me a lot. Like, you know, you don't even think about it. Like, the White Sox broadcast team on the radio side, mm-hmm. Is Connor McKnight, Les Lynn Casper, and DJ.
Yeah, not Jamie, I don't know how Len is making that transition, because that's very confusing to go from from JD to DJ.
Yeah. And it's so weird, because like I used to work the Cubs radio broadcast all the time for like the last like 3 years of my, before I started working at NBC. So hearing him now on White Sox calls is like so weird to me still, because I'm so used to hearing him doing Cubs.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it was, I wish I knew off the top of my head how long that he'd done Cubs, but he was a staple.
Yeah. Yeah. When you hear Cubs television, you're ready to hear Lynn Casper. And yeah. Now it's not that.
Well, thrilled to have you on. I've been wanting to have you on earlier, but got to find the right lane to unleash the Tony Gill. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners know you from various other House of L works. But I'm really excited to just dive into your full White Sox fandom. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm kind of playing catch up here because coming from outside of the city and then going straight into covering Cubs, I don't think I fully grasped kind of the relationship between White Sox and the national media, and specifically White Sox fans and the national media, and then just like did a very cursory Google search of like White Sox snubs. Bam! So many things came up between all of the, you know, ESPN forgetting about the most recent World Series in Chicago baseball multiple times. And then, of course, I was here for the whole Ben Verlander, Fox Sports, just forgetting to put the White Sox in his top 10 in his power rankings earlier this month. I mean, for you as a White Sox fan, like, how do you take those things as they come? Like, have you gotten used to it yet? Like, how do you digest all of it?
Yeah, you just have to get used to it. I mean, it's just once you accept that you are a White Sox fan, you also accept the fact that the rest of the nation does not care about you, like whatsoever. At least the mainstream American population just does not care about the White Sox. It's a small market team in a large market. And that usually doesn't happen, right? You got all these teams in like cities with multiple teams, the Yankees and the Mets. Like, of course, the Yankees are the big team, but the Mets are also a big team, you know? And there's, you can go across, you know, the board of multiple cities, multiple teams. It's the dynamic in Chicago in terms of the two baseball teams is so skewed to one direction. Not BTS, One Direction. That it's, you just get used to just, okay, well, wherever I'm at, there's going to be a Cubs fan somewhere. Even if I'm on the South Side, there's a lot of Cubs fandom everywhere. And it's just simple. They were on TV. They were on TV first. And they were on national TV first. And that's how you grew the audience. And before people actually realized how impactful that was, everybody was a Cub or a Brave or a Yankee fan. And that's what happened.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked with a lot of Cubs guys about how influential WGN available everywhere. I don't know why that was so hard. Being available everywhere, like, really helped boost, especially like our generation. There's so many of us people our age who across the country grew up watching them. Their parents were Cubs fans. It's being passed on. Now that that's not the case, right? That we're all a, you know, we work for a regional sports network. That's a lot of what it's either teams with their own networks putting their own teams on there, or regional sports networks broadcasting those teams. Do you see it flipping perhaps, or being a more level playing field with these next generations now that that's shifting?
It will have to be whoever gets aggressive with streaming and, you know, watching games on apps and, you know, wherever the audience is, I think will impact. Like, the more I know people discuss and talk about how powerful being on TV first was, but I still think it's understated about how powerful that is. That when broadcasting sports games live was becoming a thing, if you were the first, again, I don't even think they knew how powerful it was going to be, because that's, you're starting off multiple generations. And it wasn't just like one, it was like multiple generations of, well, this is what I came home to. So this was on TV, so this is what it was. And then you pass that down. And then that gets passed down, and then that keeps going. It's like a, you know, I don't know, like what do they call the snow when it comes down?
Snowball or mountain? Yeah, snowball.
An avalanche. Yeah, I don't know why I could not remember.
We're talking way bigger than the snowball effect. Avalanche effect.
I mean, it was an avalanche effect by the time, like, teams were like, oh, wait, we can make money off this. Oh, we can grow fan bases with this. By that time, the ball had already been rolling. So I guess it could, but we won't see that effect until, you know, 20 years, 50 years down the line, because now everybody is on TV. So everybody has an equal opportunity to be find a fan somewhere where they're not, you know, locally living at. So it's I don't think it'll have the same impact as those early days of sports broadcasting, but now you on top of making sure everybody can see you, or a lot of people can see you, you also have to be good for a long stretches of time, where it's not just the easy part of you're just on TV. Like, no, you also need to get their attention as well.
As a White Sox fan, having accepted the fact that you're not going to get as much attention as Cubs nationally, I mean, what was that? How does that affect your fandom? How does that affect the type of fan that you are?
Oh, it makes it stronger. You know, like everybody loves an underdog type thing, but you're the cool underdog. And there's like a subculture generated from that, and I think it stems from, you know, the black and white. Like, it's just a cool kind of mix of non-colors, you know, versus the is a stark right, it's a stark difference from that bright red and blue on the north side. Like, no, this is a counterculture type team that I'm rooting for. This is the underground team. This is, you know, the team that you love because everybody hates them or everybody forgets them. It's a small fan base, but it's a strong fan base that supports their team because nobody wants them in the spotlight. That's what it feels like. I mean, with the amount of snubs on ESPN, people forgetting that they won, like, you know, the 2005 World Series, and you know, people referencing like, oh, nobody watched that World Series, you know, which, I mean, nobody didn't. But still, like, it's special to the South Side just because, like, nobody wants us to be there. But we're here now, baby. Let's go.
Yeah. If we're talking about the better team in Chicago, it is very clear at this point. The opposite directions that these two teams are going. We talked off the air when I pitched you coming on here about your layers of fandom. Will you break down the onion?
Yeah. So we just mentioned just how small the overall fan base is for the White Sox. But in terms of my love and my connection to the White Sox, it's even deeper than that, where there's so many places in the city that gets promotion, and look at this part of the city in terms of the national audience. And for baseball, it's like the Cubs, it's the North Side, it's downtown. And it's all the nice things of Chicago that, you know, we all love, but that's not the Chicago that I'm from. I'm from, you know, Inglewood, West Inglewood area. That's where I was born and raised. And there's not a lot of things that come out of there that people want to promote or people want to show off to the world. And it's just like recently that, you know, Chance the Rapper, like Vic Mensa, Kanye West, like people coming from the South Side, making names for themselves and having a team that represents that specific area was important to me, because now it's like, okay, I'm kind of being heard, you know, on a national level. Like the Bulls, it's an overall city thing. The Bears, it's an overall city thing. But the White Sox is specifically for the people that are on the South Side of Chicago, the place where they show off on the news as, you know, one of the worst places, you know, in America. And you take a little pride in that. Like, no, that's where I'm from. That's what made me. That's who I am as an individual. And the White Sox on the South Side represent that for me. And then on top of that, now we have Tim Anderson. who is from the area similar where he's from in Alabama that I'm from in Inglewood and West Inglewood area that speak. Like, first we had Derrick Rose. He was our like instant connecting point. Obviously we have a lot of basketball players, but in terms of baseball, I don't think there's ever been a person that connects to the Black White Sox fan like Tim Anderson did. And of course we have Frank, we had many other Black players on the White Sox, but for me in my generation specifically, Tim Anderson truly represents that part of Chicago that doesn't get talked about and doesn't get represented well. And Tim constantly is giving back to that specific area. He knows the group that he's helping and he knows the group that he's representing. The Washington Post, I think, put out a piece like yesterday about Tim Anderson not, you know, following the rules. And I read that whole thing and I'm like, yes, yes, this is exactly what Tim Anderson is. And it's, again, a representation of specifically the Black White Sox fan, and it's being brash and outspoken and loud and being the best that you can be and letting your opponent and other people know, no, I worked hard to get here. And it's just a great representation in the embodiment of Tim Anderson of the Black White Sox fan that I think is growing the fan base on the South Side as well.
Yeah, I think one of those early quotes and like the lead from that story was black as black can be, I'm real as real can be.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was like, facts. Like, I mean, as you know the demographics of, you know, the average baseball watcher. Like, I mean, it's not young and black. It's just not. Have that person wearing those colors or non-colors, black and white aren't colors, but wearing that uniform, helping create a uniform, you know, for the South Side that represents the South Side, I think it's been so late having Tim Anderson here as a representation for us.
Yeah, when we're talking about national coverage, people jumped on those uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a massive positive point. I mean, I feel like the White Sox have been so fascinating this year. From obviously they got all the preseason manager hiring hype / criticism all in one, and then there was a spike with the uniforms. For some reason, the play on the field is what doesn't seem to make it through. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's fair. But one, I think for like a few decades, like the White Sox cap has been an underground like favorite nationally. So when people think of the White Sox, they think of just the uniform and, oh man, that's a cool cap. Like, that's a cool, you know, uniform. I mean, as far back as NWA, you know, like it's a cultural piece. That White Sox cap, but in terms of the on play on the field, it does get overlooked because, again, when you think of Chicago and baseball, your brain automatically goes to the Chicago Cubs. And that's due to what we've discussed, you know, before in terms of growing the fan base early on. But if you're not paying attention to this team, you know, now, this is the best team of, you know, my lifetime. You know, and that even goes back to 05 and 06, where, like, I don't think anybody was expecting them to win the World Series, the 05 World Series. It just kind of happened that way. But this team has expectations. Like, I don't remember, well, probably the lockout season, they were supposed to be pretty good in the mid-90s. But since then, I don't remember a team having so much expectations to actually get it done. On the White Sox side, and it's a different space. It's a different environment for not only for the organization, but for the fans to actually be a favorite or one of the favorites to win the World Series. Like, if people aren't paying attention to what's going on now, I don't know what else to do. Like, I don't know what else they have to do to get national relevance. And I guess maybe that speaks to just baseball being just such a regional sport. Like if your team isn't in it, then you're not really, you know, paying attention. But if you are a baseball fan, and I don't claim to be a baseball fan, I'm a White Sox fan. But if you do like baseball and you know what's going on around the league, you have to be paying attention to the White Sox.
Absolutely. They're stacked. When you look at that pitching staff, when you look at how they've dealt with all of these injuries and now having guys come back one by one, like, they're formidable.
Yeah.
I like the parallels that you kind of drew out between the South Side and this team being overlooked nationally, or only, you know, when it comes to the South Side, pointing to unfavorable statistics and this, that, and the other. And I feel like when you talk about Tim Anderson, he's even just strip away the White Sox, he himself has been a part of this kind of like back and forth potential. So like he was only an All-Star this year as a replacement player. And he has been pushing forward the narrative. You know, the league goes and does their whole let the kids play little marketing campaign or whatever, but he's actually been the one of the guys at the forefront who's been pushing those unwritten rules and questioning them, and even in some ways doesn't get complete credit for that. Like people have moved on to other guys who were doing that when he was really at the forefront. I mean, how do you think those three link together?
You know, it's not easy when you're on the front lines of changing something. And when Tim first came up, I think he was slowly recognizing the task that was before him specifically. That in order to make the impact that he wanted, he was going to have to be, there was nobody there to teach him how to do it. Right. For the majority of his time as a White Sox, he was, if I can remember, maybe one of, if not the only Black player on the team. So there's no like hand-holding in the locker room of this is how you do it. This is Tim had to make his own way and make his own path if, you know, it, on this team and in the league. So as he grew into that, he started to recognize that a lot of people aren't going to like it. A lot of people in the league aren't going to like it. What he's on, and he's been willing to take that head on. And obviously, like you mentioned, the league has since, okay, we like this. Maybe not you, but Tatis Jr., he's cool. And, you know, Shohei Ohtani, he's breaking some molds and stuff. Let's, you know, let's do that. And, you know, there's Tim Anderson who was like, I was already here. I've been doing this. I was just the batting champ. Like, what's going on to see? But I don't think he's bitter about any of it. Like, if he looks back on it, he started this, or he was one of the first to start this movement of, you know, changing the game and how it's viewed and attacking the unwritten rules of baseball head on. He's the first person to do it. Even his suspension. I don't know if you remember that. You know, where he got in the argument and he used a term that got him suspended. Like, I was all for that. I was all for everything Tim Anderson at that point because I knew what he was going up against. Because every Black person, I'm not going to say every Black person, I probably shouldn't say that, but I'll just speak for me. I've been in spaces where I'm the only Black person there. And I want my experience and my thoughts to be whatever in the content that I'm creating or in the space that's not normally used to Black folks being there. I wanted to change the game in my sense in wherever spaces I was doing. So as Tim was going along, I was growing up with him. So that's another layer of connection that, you know, I feel with this White Sox team and Tim Anderson specifically. But I think all in all, if Tim Anderson, and I'm sure he does this, if he thinks about, sits down and thinks about the path that he's on and the path that he started, and then the continued, you know, kind of overlooking and disrespect, I think it's just going to keep him motivated. And that's not a, there's no better mentality than, okay, you still going to forget about me? Okay, watch this. And just keep fighting and keep pushing. That is so Southside. Like, it's excellent. Like, nothing is handed to you. You got to go get it.
I was at his little table during All-Star. For anyone who doesn't know how All-Star media is laid out, basically every All-Star from American League is set up at their own table. Same with National League. They swap in and out. But I was there at Tim Anderson's table when someone asked him about the whole changing of the game, whatever, and he kind of just laughed. He was like, well, I got suspended for bat flipping, but sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's a continued fight. Like, change doesn't happen overnight, you know? Like, I mean, they just got good, like, in the last couple years. So that's another layer to this. Like, not only do you have to be good in order to, you know, change narratives and change things, you also need success to back up what you're doing. And I think that's coming around now, where not only are they individually talented, this White Sox team, they're also having success overall as a team. And obviously the ultimate success and validation of everything that you want to change and set a precedent for needs to go into winning, you know, a World Series, so that everybody knows that, yes, I can have a personality. Yes, I can be myself. Yes, I can push back on unwritten rules, and I can also lock in and win as well.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Any last parting shots, hot takes, conspiracy theories, any of them before we log out here?
No, I mean, thanks. Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate the time. I feel like a lot of people just think I'm just hot takey, you know, always looking for the joke guy. But no, like, when it comes to like serious things and important things, like this conversation, you know, like representation, like we always discuss that with, you know, women in the workplace, more minorities in, you know, in the workplace. This kind of falls like underneath that kind of aspect for me in terms of White Sox representation, where there, you know, there's not a lot of people wanting to discuss what that is and the different layers that it has. And I'm glad you brought this topic up, and I'm glad you're discussing it, Maddie. So thanks again for having Hot Take Tony, you know, be a part of that important conversation.
No, thanks so much for coming on. And I think you bring up a really important point there. When we're talking about the suspension, when we look at the media that's covering all of baseball, but I mean, when we're talking about national media within the White Sox, I mean, a lot of the people who are reacting to Tim Anderson saying the N-word are white men who might not have any context for, you know, how he's using this term or whatever it may be. And that can be said for so many different cases. And so, yeah, we absolutely not, obviously that's not to say that white men shouldn't be writing about these mm-hmm. things. When the media landscape looks like it does, it should be addressed, but we end up getting the same take over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And that's why representation is so important in our
field. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Again, nobody's saying you can't write on these things as a, you know, white journalist, but if you want to do it well and you want to do it right with nuance and actual in-depth thoughts, it just requires an extra layer of questioning and an extra layer of finding out the finer details. And some do that. Some actually put in the work. You, and you're not white, but you put in the work to understand, right? to understand other cultures and other people. And it's not, I think you benefit more overall than just, well, how do I feel about this? All right, that's what I'm going to go based on. And it's like, I mean, you could do that. Like, a lot of people have made money doing that. But if you actually want to get the truth, which I think all journalists and journalism is about, it just takes just another layer of work to actually get the right things done and the right things written if you don't have that context. And the natural curiosity should lead you that way. You know, it's like, I have no clue about what's going on right now. I wonder what it is. Like, that should be your initial reaction.
Let me listen.
Right. to writing. And if more people would do that, I think overall, I think the media would be viewed, I think, in a much better light.
Yeah. Well said. All right. Thanks so much, Tony. Really appreciate you coming on. We'll make it happen again at some point. I don't know on what, but we'll make it happen.
Hey, if you need some hot takes and conspiracy theories, I got you.
All right. We'll bring actual hot take Tony on at some point.
Well, that'll about do it. And I know, even with all that we talked about over however long those two discussions were, there's plenty more. And I know White Sox fans have been having this discussion for years. And we'll continue to have this discussion as their team keeps rising and the Cubs keep figuring out this rebuild that they're not calling a rebuild, and we'll see what in the world happens this offseason. Meanwhile, White Sox are in good position to not only obviously compete this year, but then carry some of that over into next year and keep that window, that championship window open. Really exciting time. Stoked to see how it plays out for the Sox. And thank you to you all for tuning in to this edition of More Than a White Man's Game on the House of L Podcast Network. Thank you to our incredible producer, Lawrence Holmes, who not only produces this podcast, but also started all of House of L. So, thanks to him for that. All of you who tuned in this week, really appreciate you listening and your support. Tell your friends, family, pets, grandparents, acquaintances, enemies, and we'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.